The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Good day, everyone. Welcome again to another edition of Boomer Generation Radio here on WWDB AM 860 in Greater Philadelphia and streaming live on WWDBAM.com. Boomer Generation Radio is brought to you by Kendall, a system of not-for-profit communities and services that advocate for and empower older adults to reach their full potential. Kendall is committed to working with others to together transform the experience of aging. And to learn more about Kendall, that's K-E-N-D-A-L, we invite you to visit www.discoverkendall.org or call them toll-free at 888-759-0128. That's discoverkendall.org, 888-759-0128. And today's edition of Boomer Generation Radio, remember, if you want to contact us, the email address is boomergenerationradio@gmail.com. And I'm hoping through the magic of Tim and electronics, Kathleen is there waiting for us. Kathleen, are you there?
I am right here, Richard.
Great.
I'm glad to be here.
Great. Hey, God bless electronics when it works. We welcome to Boomer Generation Radio Kathleen Dowling Singh, the author of The Grace in Dying, How We Are Transformed Spiritually as We Die, and most recently, The Grace in Aging, Awaken as You Grow Older. Kathleen, welcome to Boomer Generation Radio.
Oh, thanks, Richard. Thanks for inviting me.
There's a whole series of questions and things that I want to get to, but the first thing is, I see in your write-up and some of the material that was sent to me in preparation for today, you are involved with something called transpersonal psychology. So I need you to explain what transpersonal psychology is.
Oh, the simplest definition I can give is it's a study of what happens with our awareness when we free it from a purely personal sense. I mean, most of the time for most people, our attention is really trapped in self-reference. Everything that arises has to do with me. And through spiritual practice, through transformative practice, we can literally liberate the attention from only self. And it's a vast expanse of consciousness. There's a shift in identity and shifts in ways of knowing. Knowing no longer remains merely conceptual.
Okay, so, I'm just a guy, plain old guy from southern New Jersey. What does that mean? You're talking about transformative practice. You teach this. You teach some of this. What does that mean to work with a person to transform their sense of consciousness from pure ego self to really, I would imagine, some sort of culturally or personal integrative practice with other people? Or am I misunderstanding you?
No, you're not misunderstanding it at all. And it would be lovely if we could affect that change for other people. But that isn't the way it works. Really, each one of us can only affect the change for ourselves. And we do affect that change when we adopt some kind of contemplative or meditative practice. Because that practice, one, it quiets our busy, busy mind, right? It's our minds typically are always churning. It quiets our busy mind. And in that quiet, you could say, we actually have a platform for looking at all the beliefs that run through our mind all the time so unexaminedly. We have an opportunity to become mindful of what thoughts are actually going through our mind and deciding whether or not we want to continue to believe them.
So in your practice with individuals, it sounds like you're using meditation, mindfulness meditation. Is that correct?
Oh, yes, among other things. I mean, every wisdom tradition has practices that are time proven and that are valid and actually affect the transformation. So yes, I use mindfulness, but also a lot of other meditation practices, for example, that would develop would cultivate our capacity for compassion and our capacity to love and mm-hmm. our capacity to forgive.
So in Grace and Dying, which was published by Harper One in 1998, you seem to approach the end of life issues and one of the blurbs that I read with the concept of death is safe. And, you know, for most people, death is filled with fear. And could you just unpack what you mean by this idea of death is safe?
Mm-hmm. It's filled with fear, really, for all of us to the degree that we think who we believe ourselves to be is the sum total of our existence, of our potential. Our potential is infinitely more vast than what we believe. And so, yes, people receive a terminal prognosis. There's great fear. There's great sadness. There's anxiety and anguish and all of the painful emotions. But there is also a transformative process that occurs that leads to what I call the grace in dying, that leads to a sense of a vaster self. The easiest way I think of, Richard, to conceptualize it is that dying, the process of dying and aging, if we allow it, both of those processes strip away what's inessential in our lives.
What do you mean by inessential?
Well, think of it. Think of all the places we cling, and all of the things that bother us. If each of us were to do a pie chart, you know, in our minds right mm-hmm. now, of all the places our attention has been in the last 24 hours, it will appear to us, it will become very clear that much of our attention and our concerns are frivolous.
So this understanding of this process of transforming an individual as they walk through the last stages of life is really, in a sense, is it a type of spiritual healing, an acceptance?
There is a spiritual healing, and it does even go deeper than acceptance. It goes into a complete wholehearted surrender. But it's a journey to get there.
See, surrender.
And all of the fear that you mentioned a few moments ago, and the sadness and the anguish and the loss, all of that comes up.
See, I think a lot of us are limited by the vocabulary that we use. So when you use the word surrender, I mean, in various religious traditions, that has a series of meanings. And in the culture, in pop culture, it has a meaning of, in essence, surrender equals giving up. But I don't think that's what you're talking about, giving up. It's a sense of...
No, it's not at all. And, you know, this culture really, truly is a pretty spiritually impoverished one. So, of course, in a culture that's ego-based, surrender would be the last thing we'd want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But in the midst of a transformative process, there is great release and liberation in surrendering who we believed ourselves to be with all of its stresses and worries and judgments.
We're talking with Kathleen Singh, the author of The Grace in Aging, Awaken as You Grow Older, and The Grace in Dying, How We Are Transformed Spiritually as We Die. We'll be back with Kathleen in a second, but I just want to remind our audience of the Hecht Investment Group, a good friend of this show, the Hecht Investment Group of Janie Montgomery Scott, which provides concierge financial consulting and planning services. Using a formal investment process as their foundation, clients receive frequent communication and rapid response to questions There are no needs greater, as many of us know, than our own when it comes to personal financial planning. And the Hecht Investment Group provides experienced guidance and an efficient management process that is important in today's environment. Contact the Hecht Investment Group toll-free at 855-289-2168. That's 855-289-2168. Or visit hechtinvestmentgroup.com. The Hecht Investment Group is also on Twitter, LinkedIn, and on Facebook. And Peter Hecht, as a good friend of ours, was recognized by Philadelphia Magazine and New Jersey Magazine as a five-star wealth manager for 2013 and 2014. And as we've reminded you before, Janie Montgomery Scott is a member of the New York Stock Exchange, FINRA, and the SIPC. Kathleen Singh, author of The Grace in Dying, How We Are Transformed Spiritually as We Die, and The Grace in Aging, Awaken as You Grow Older. Kathleen, before we proceed, somebody wants to get a hold of these books. How do they get a hold of them?
Oh, they're in bookstores all over. Simon & Schuster's distributing them, and they're certainly on Amazon, Barnes & Noble.
So the in some of the background and some of the work that you do, what are some of the stages of this psychological transformation that you teach, that you talk, and you teach this around the country? If I'm not, you are available. You go out. You not, these are not just confined to the books. You do workshops, etc. Am I right?
Yes, I do. I do retreats and teachings, as you say, all over. And it was actually from meeting so many of the people that I had the privilege of meeting doing those teachings that the idea rose to write The Grace in Aging. Because most of the people who showed up are our generation. They're baby boomers. And for whatever reasons and whatever ways in their lives, they became interested in deepening their own sense of depth and of being. There, I met thousands of people who recognized that as baby boomers, these are our last decades. If we want to wake up, these are our last decades to do that. And it's, we don't have time stretching before us, you know, and we can't, if we want to wake up, it's not very prudent to just flirt with the spiritual path. We need really to bring it front and center in our lives. And that's what The Grace in Aging looks at, how to create the special conditions in our lives just as we're living them at these ages we're at, 60s and 70s, how to create the special conditions that elicit transformative shifts.
What is it about the boomer generation that's driving this engine? You know, I do a lot of work and workshops on spirituality of aging, and specifically within the Jewish community. But what is it about this generation, especially the first stage boomers, the people now in their, let's say, 60s, that pushes this button of saying, you know, I need to go deeper. I need to go deeper, as opposed to just saying, hey, you know, just let me just enjoy things and the heck with everything else.
Well, I think that for a big percentage of boomers, there's a recognition that we lived in a very fortunate time in terms of spirituality. So many traditions from the East came to America after 1950. Ancient teachings that weren't available before. I think within the Christian and Jewish communities, there was a recognition that young people who were caught in the wave, it was a beautiful wave of the 60s and 70s, were going en masse to get these Eastern teachings. And both Christian and Jewish communities began to develop or resurrect their own contemplative practices. And I think we live in a world, 50 years ago, there were maybe 10 books in a bookstore about spirituality. And, you know, you walk into a bookstore now, there's shelves and shelves and shelves from every wisdom tradition in the world. It's a very fortunate time we live in. And I think anybody who caught the wave of the 60s and 70s and allowed an expansion in their consciousness of what was possible and what the world could be and what we could be. I think that longing is finally, it's calling loud for baby boomers who do realize these are our last decades.
Let me ask you a question, though, that always comes up. Is this openness to, you know, search for the spiritual meaning, et cetera, is it a product of social class and economic class? I mean, in the workshops that you've done around the country and the thousands of people you've talked to, as you just said, is there a cross-section of economic and social class that you deal with? There's a part of this conversation that always seems to say, this really is the privilege of the people who have the time and the money, especially the time and the money, to explore these issues. But if you're a 62-year-old bus driver and really you just have to work as hard as you can just to pay the bills and get through the day, you may not have the time or the luxury of contemplating the eternal truths. Is this wave really sort of like in that direction, or are you finding it across the board?
I think that there's a real measure of truth in what you're saying, Richard. If we lived consumed with pain or consumed with poverty, for example, that captures our attention. And there is, as you say, neither the time nor the leisure, nor even the energy at the end of a long day to begin to think about this. And so in some senses it is a privilege. It's good fortune that we have all of the benefits that are available to us in this culture to begin to look at this. And in that sense, too, to grow spiritually is a responsibility that we have if we have the leisure and the good fortune to have even heard of such things and the time and the inclination to practice it. It's a responsibility because the end result of spiritual growth isn't to be smug in some isolated enlightened state. It's really to be engaged in a compassionate way with other people, with causes for injustice, to be engaged with care for the planet.
So,
good question.
Go ahead.
No, that's about all I want to say about that.
Okay. Then let me go to something else before we start running out of time. You make this assertion that in our later years, that is a time when we begin to open up to our own spiritual growth. And this probably takes place in a variety of different ways in different cultures, each in their own, you know, perhaps religious communities, etc. But how do we use, what are the ways we can use our later years, our years of maturity, to awaken this spiritual growth? Are there tips? Are there practices? Are there formulas that you've come up with and written about that really could give someone open the door to this path?
Well, two-thirds of the book, let's say, The Grace in Aging, has to do with what are the special conditions that call forth spiritual transformation and spiritual growth, and how do we bring them into our lives. There's conditions like incorporating deliberate times of solitude in our lives, times where we deliberately practice silence, times where we people talk about life resolution. It's something that most dying people go through, although informally. As we age, we can do it formally. Not so much to aggrandize our sense of self, but to let go of all the various ways and functions and accomplishments with which we've identified. Mm-hmm. You know, in some ways, the simplest way I can express it, Richard, is this. When we live our lives with our attention completely trapped in our ego, in our sense of self, who we believe ourselves to be, we're living our lives, I'm going to make an analogy with the cell phone. We're living our lives as if we keep the cell phone perpetually on airplane mode. And on airplane mode, all we have is recycled music, recycled games, you know, recycled data over and over and over. And on airplane mode, just as when we live entrapped in the sense of self, there is no access to anything beyond it. And so spiritual transformation in a lot of ways is like getting the cell phone off airplane mode. It's freeing attention to go into a vastness of being that's freed of that's freed completely from the stresses and the anxieties and the worries and judgments in which we ordinarily live. So I think that's a helpful analogy for people.
I would imagine that the attempt to awaken one's own spirituality and to really confront some of the things that you've talked about today and some of the things you've written about comes with a certain amount of risk. I would imagine you've bumped into, because I know I have, people who, you know, just will verbalize some excuse, but really don't want to take that journey because for some variety of reasons, maybe having to do with how they were raised and their whole family of origin issues.
Mm-hmm.
But what's the level of the ability to turn around to people in their 50s and 60s and 70s and say, it is perfectly okay to take that risk to dare to move off the status quo and grow? Have you bumped into this sense of fear at all in your work?
Oh, good Lord, yes. All over. The Grace in Aging, by the way, is written for people who are willing to take the leap because living in fear has become too uncomfortable.
What do you mean by uncomfortable?
It's very uncomfortable to live in fear. Think of the enormous amount of energy that goes constantly scanning the environment, you know, and keeping up our defenses. And how lonely it is behind our defenses.
Well, the issue of aloneness, I'm sure, comes up in some of the conversations you have had with people. Because my feeling as I've done these workshops is that as we get older, this fear of being alone, of dying alone, of losing our relationships, of that really can become all-consuming. And I'm wondering how you have approached this in your writings. Yes.
Well, I've spoke a little bit about the book, speaking of special conditions.
Right.
And one of the first special conditions that we all need to import into our lives is confronting our own mortality and the mortality of everyone we love. And to just sit with it, face the fears that arise, accept the predictable sufferings of life. You know, we live in a culture that wants all of the pleasure and none of the pain. And in a way, our culture has steered us 180 degrees in the wrong direction. There are predictable sufferings in a human life. You know, as we age, we lose the appearance we once had. We lose the strength, the agility We lose our the same capacity we had in the prime of our life to function in the world. We'll lose our friends and our siblings and our partners. There are predictable sufferings in a human life. And it's almost, you could almost say that's the first order of business.
Kathleen,
to come to peace with that, that I'm not an exception. I can't outwit aging and I can't outwit death.
So from what I'm hearing you say, the acceptance of one's own mortality is the beginning, is the opening of the door to one's spiritual growth. Would I be correct?
Absolutely. For one thing, when we do get that, it sounds morbid to a lot of people. Why would I want to sit down and open myself to mortality? It sounds morbid, they say. But to have done it is instantly. We live our lives less frivolously. We live it with incredibly deeper appreciation. And whatever reluctance we have ever had to share our love or to share our vulnerability, that reluctance dissipates when you see how precious and fleeting this life is.
We've been speaking with Kathleen Singh, the author of The Grace in Dying, How We Are Transformed Spiritually as We Die, and The Grace in Aging, Awaken as You Grow Older, both books available at bookstores everywhere and electronically through Amazon. And Kathleen, I want to thank you very much for giving us your time here on Boomer Generation Radio this morning. And I wish you nothing but continued success and good health. And again, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Richard. I wish this good work you're doing on this show all good fortune, too.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks again.
Take care. Have a good day. Here on Boomer Generation Radio, I want to remind you of a couple of good friends of the show, Samaritan Healthcare and Hospice, which really is concerned with the relationships we have with our elderly and aging parents. And if you're worried about your parents' failing memory and concerned about your parents' safety at home and not quite sure where to turn for help, if you're concerned about any of these things, then SeniorWise is here for you. SeniorWise Geriatric Care Managers can provide a comprehensive assessment and care plan, help keep your loved ones safe at home, screen and monitor in-home services, and help you avoid costly mistakes. Ease your loved ones' transition to a care facility if that becomes necessary. SeniorWise is a member of the Samaritan Family of Services, and to speak with a SeniorWise geriatric care manager today, we invite you to call 856-552-5166. That's 856-552-5166, or log on to www.seniorwisecare, that's one word, seniorwisecare.org. The SeniorWise Geriatric Care Manager, again, that phone number is 856-552-5166. And as we've discussed many times on the show, this is a really important service that is being offered today, and really to the help of many, many individuals. And if you are listening to this program, you're no doubt a baby boomer or perhaps a young senior. And when we remind you of our sponsor, 50andbeyond.com, for being the regional resource for baby boomers and the adult aging population. 50andbeyond.com website simplifies the lives of baby boomers and seniors by providing the necessary information for those who are in the 50-plus age group. And this information ranges from health and wellness to travel and beauty tips, healthcare information, living options such as in-home care services, assisted living and dementia care, to financial and legal information. 50andbeyond.com is a resource that you're not going to want to be without. It's a one-stop shop. It's a website. It's also now a bi-monthly printed edition, which you can access by going on 50andbeyond.com website and ordering it through the contact page. And it's really on top of today's issues and concerns for baby boomers, 50andbeyond.com. And we're very, very excited to really now start announcing that 50andbeyond.com will be developing a free community event on November 13th that's coming up in a couple of weeks from 1 to 6 p.m. It is a Boomer and Beyond Expo, which is going to feature about 100 exhibitors, seminars, entertainment, and prizes. And the keynote speakers, we're delighted to announce, will be Tracy Davidson of NBC 10 News and our own Barry Reisman from the Barry Reisman Show here on WWDB that precedes Boomer Generation Radio. And it's going to be held at the Aloft Hotel, that's A-L-O-F-T Hotel, in Mount Laurel. That's right on Route 73 and Fellowship Road, right on the corner there. And you can visit the 50andbeyond.com website for more information. That's the Boomer and Beyond Expo, and it is November 13th from 1 to 6 p.m. at the Aloft Hotel, Mount Laurel in New Jersey, Route 73 and Fellowship Road. And again, visit the 50andbeyond.com for further information. Welcome back to Boomer Generation Radio, brought to you again by the Kendall Corporation. Kendall is a system of not-for-profit communities and services that advocate for and empower older adults to reach their full potential, committed to working with others to together transform the experience of aging, and again to reach Kendall, which is K-E-N-D-A-L. We invite you to visit them at www.discoverkendall.org or call toll-free at 888-759-0128. And you're listening to Boomer Generation Radio here on WWDB AM 860 in Greater Philadelphia, streaming live on WWDBAM.com. And again, the web, the reach us on the Internet is, or email is, boomergenerationradio@gmail.com. And we're very pleased to welcome to Boomer Generation Radio Maureen Casey, the Chief Operating Officer of Chandler Hall Health Services. Maureen, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Hi, welcome. Welcome to Boomer Generation Radio. Thank you for calling in and being available to us. There's some very exciting things happening at First of all, what's Chandler Hall? Let's get that out of the way first. What is Chandler Hall?
Chandler Hall is an affiliate of the Kendall Corporation, and we are a not-for-profit continuing care retirement community located in Newtown, Bucks County, and we were established in 1973, so we have a long history of providing care to Bucks County and the surrounding area, and we have many diverse programs in order to do that.
So CCRC, a very, very important element in the caring of families and family systems and older adults. The intergenerational program, there's a couple of things that are really stand out that you seem to be aware of and seem to be developing at Chandler. So could you, what is this intergenerational program? Because it sounds kind of exciting.
It's very exciting, and I think it is one of the aspects of our community that in some ways sets us apart. Some organizations do provide child care on site where children of employees or the community can come in and have daycare on site. But our intergenerational program is one that we're very proud of. It actually was established back in 1988 and started somewhat small. As I said, Chandler Hall was started in 1973. And in the 80s, our auxilians had noted that our workforce in some ways was struggling and needed some support with child care, and that if, in fact, they could bring their children to work, it would make their life easier and would also provide some enrichment for the residents as well as enrichment for the children. And so from 1988 until now, our program has really grown to be an integral part of life at Chandler Hall. So we do have a child development program on campus that is for children from infancy through certified kindergarten. In addition to that, we provide summer camp for children from first grade through 14 years of age. And we also welcome interns on campus who primarily are college age. But the children and you know, whether they be the young children or children in grade school, are certainly an integral part of life in our community. They interact with our residents on a daily basis, whether it be informally, just moving through the hallways, going out to playgrounds. One of the things that you would notice on our campus is that there's playgrounds and play equipment everywhere on the campus that the children can use and move through the campus. But then there's also formal programs that we offer so that the children and residents are partnered and are able to form real relationships. So it's not just that the children come to entertain the residents, but they really socialize and form long-term relationships because they are together for planned programs. And there's a lot of thought in matching the residents and the children so that it is successful on both sides and allows for learning and growth on both sides.
That's pretty cool. I mean, the first thing comes, lots of questions come to my mind.
Sure.
How many other CCRCs do this?
I would say that there definitely are other CCRCs who do provide child care on site. I would say that the way in which Chandler Hall does it is somewhat different than other campuses. I certainly wouldn't say that we're the only ones, but I would say that we have a long history and probably in some ways are leaders in this area.
It's a pretty great idea, I mean, when you come to think of it, because it's really just normal, you know, kids of various generations. How is this presented to the residents? Was there any pushback? You know, is there saying we, you know, well, how was it presented to the resident?
It's interesting because back in the 80s, as I said, it started small, and there was, you know, some small classrooms that were set up for the children. And from my understanding and talking to some of the auxilians who were the founders of the program, they did speak with the residents and did get their feedback, and it was embraced early on. As you said, being with people of all generations is a normal part of life. It's something that we all encounter every day, and the residents were also happy to support the staff because they also recognized that to come into work at 7 a.m. in the morning, and if you have young children that you need help with, that to be able to bring them to work is really a wonderful thing, and know that they're cared for well and cared for safely, and that they're having fun. And so the residents embraced it early on, and the residents who come to live at Chandler Hall continue to embrace it and support it, and you know, certainly look forward to seeing the children. And as I said, they know the children personally. They know their names. They know what they like. They know what they like to play with. And the residents are really integral to the children's lives. And the children on our campus, we call our program IG. So the children know IG as something fun. So they get excited in their class when their teacher says, okay, let's get ready for IG. And they're excited. They're running through the halls. They're waiting to see their friends because the residents are their friends. And they look to the residents. And many of these children, as we know, it's just life in the world today, mm-hmm. that the nuclear family, you know, so many of us grew up with our grandparents living around the corner or even our grandparents living in our homes. And that doesn't always happen today. You know, families are separated. And so it is an opportunity for the children to create relationships with elders that are meaningful and an opportunity for them to understand aging in a way that they might not otherwise have an opportunity.
You said you have a program from infancy and above and with teenagers in the summer camp.
Yeah.
Does it ever happen that some of the teenagers and some of the interns will develop or seek out some of the residents who've had life experience in an area that they particularly want to go into, and you create some sort of like informal mentor program? Like, I would like to go into business. Well, Joe ran a business for 50 years, and let me give you some practical advice about you know, what classes to take or what's the best direction to go to. Does that mentoring thing ever happen?
I would say that perhaps not in a formal way, but certainly informally, the children quickly recognize residents who have lake interests and know that the residents are open to giving advice and to talking. And just to personalize a little bit, I have three children, and my 12-year-old was in the program from the time he was two and has always been interested in history. So one of the benefits for him was we have some veterans on campus.
Oh, yeah.
And so he was able to hear stories firsthand about, World War II and about, you know, life. And so certainly the children benefit from talking to residents.
Oh, gosh, yeah, it's better than any history book.
It is, to hear it live. And actually last year, Chandler Hall celebrated a year of stories. Mm. And we had an intern on campus who was responsible for working with our teenagers on campus from 12 years to 14 years and helped to train those students during the summer to interview residents.
Wow.
And they each worked with a different resident to interview them about their life stories, and then that was documented on a DVD, and then the DVD was given to the residents, who then could also have copies to give to family members or friends, which told their story. So it was a really exciting project that we had on campus.
I have to ask you this because it's part of, as you mentioned before, the natural process of life. I would imagine some of these kids develop, and the teenagers too, develop a real close relationship to some of these the residents at Chandler Hall. What happens, and I'm sure it's happened, that resident passes away, and how is that handled within the context of this intergenerational program?
It of course happens, and it's difficult for the children to lose a friend. Just the way it is for all of us. And we are certainly open with the children. I mean, there sometimes comes a time when the resident isn't able to participate in programs.
Mm-hmm.
And surely the children realize that person is not there. The teachers talk openly about that the person isn't feeling well and that they're not able to come, and keep the children informed. I mean, sometimes it happens suddenly. And so the teachers are also trained to really recognize how the children are feeling, to acknowledge their emotions. And also, whenever possible, sometimes I can recall that there was a resident who loved when the children passed by and would always call them into their room and interact with them in their space. And so there was a time that the teacher was able to bring the children down and, you know, the room was empty and talk about that the resident was no longer there, that they had died and that they wouldn't be seeing them anymore. Mm-hmm. So it certainly is a natural part of living.
It's a great
dying is the progression, and
right.
Children. It is an amazing thing to see on our campus, because children are when they grow up with people and with the aging process in front of them, it becomes very normal for them. It becomes very natural, and they're open to asking questions, open to understanding and hearing the information. And then it's our responsibility, certainly, to support them through that process of grieving.
We're speaking with Maureen Casey, Chief Operating Officer of Chandler Hall Health Services here in Bucks County in Delaware Valley, Greater Philadelphia. And a reminder that this portion of Boomer Generation Radio is being brought to you by Kendall Outreach, serving the field of aging by raising public awareness and advocacy around important issues of older adults, and through education and training in comprehensive, safe, and individualized long-term care practices. Kendall Outreach has been sharing Kendall's approach to quality care with consumers, advocates, providers, governmental agencies, and related organizations since 1989. And to learn more, visit kendall.org, that's kendal.org, and click on Outreach. We're back with Maureen Casey, the Chief Operating Officer of Chandler Hall Health Services, here on Boomer Generation Radio, WWDB AM 860, and streaming live on WWDBAM.com. Maureen, one other very fascinating program that seems to be evolving out of Chandler Hall. I don't know whether it would be this, the intergenerational stuff that you're doing is really fantastic. But talk to me about this program that deals with palliative care, since palliative care now is a very, very hot item in our world and the medical world and the treatment world. What's this about?
Sure. Palliative care really is care that is provided to treat and address symptoms of illness or disease. And the purpose of palliative care is not to treat or cure the disease, but rather to address any of the symptoms, and probably particularly pain is one that is focused on, to make sure that people are comfortable and to make sure that people really can live the best quality of life until they die.
So how does this operate in the CCRC?
At Chandler Hall, we provide hospice care both in the community at large as well as on our campus, and we do have a residential hospice. And just to be clear, because a lot of times people get confused between the words palliative care and hospice care. The type of care that is provided is palliative care. Hospice care is palliative care, but it is provided under the Medicare benefit. So hospice really talks about the payer who pays for it, and that is Medicare pays for hospice. But people can choose palliative care in any setting, choose comfort care, where an interdisciplinary team of people, which includes the person at the center and their family and their friends if they choose, as well as nurses, physicians, social workers, and volunteers who are specifically trained to support people through their illness, through their pain, and through the dying process.
So, I mean, my understanding and the people I know who are palliative care physicians,
yes,
really is focused in on, like you said, the term comfort care and pain management, with the understanding that for those individuals who are dealing with pain, given medical technology in this specialty, there really is very little need for a human being to constantly endure significant pain and suffering due to that pain. Is that correct?
Yes, and that is certainly one of our priorities and one of our focuses, is that we don't want people to experience pain, because we know that when people are in pain, that is really the center of their world at that time.
Right.
And it's very difficult for them to participate in anything else, for them to engage with the people that they love, for them to do the things that they love, to eat, to, you know, so when pain is addressed and addressed appropriately, people then can focus on the living part and, you know, completing their life the way that they are choosing to.
But if I'm understanding you correctly, the program at Chandler makes the distinction that palliative care is not necessarily hospice care.
Right. People can choose to have comfort care. People can choose not to actively or aggressively treat their illnesses or diseases, and choose to not return to the hospital if they choose not to, and to stay in place and to receive the care that they need and to have their pain addressed in place. And Chandler Hall provides those services in people's homes in the community, but then we also provide it on our campus, whether it be in our nursing home, Friends Nursing Home, in our personal care homes, on campus. And then we also have the residential hospice, which is an area that people can come to. And sometimes people's pain can be complicated, and it's not always so easy to manage, or the family or the person needs some support. And people can come to Chandler Hall as an inpatient in our residential hospice, and they can do it short term. And we can address their pain, manage their pain, and then they can go back home, wherever home is. And or if someone is truly acutely ill and perhaps can't be at home, We all don't have the benefit of a family care provider, or perhaps the person themselves really doesn't want their family to provide that care to them. They can also come to the hospice pavilion at Chandler Hall.
So from what also I'm hearing you say is that there is on campus a hospice, but it's not just limited to the residents of the CCRC. So an outside person who is not who's not a living at Chandler Hall under certain circumstances can make themselves available and enter the hospice. Is that correct?
That's correct, and not just the residential hospice, but the vast majority of our palliative care and hospice is done in our external community in the Bucks County area, and we provide services to about 500 people a year under the hospice benefit in our community. So much of the care that we're providing are, in fact, in people's homes outside of Chandler Hall.
Maureen, before we start running out of time, and we will pretty soon, the Chandler Hall is located, you say, in Bucks County. If somebody's listening to this and they really want to explore some of these ideas because they're captivated by especially the intergenerational thing, this palliative care thing, how do they get a hold of you? How do they contact you?
Well, there's several ways. They could certainly visit our website at www.chandlerhall.org. They can also call us at 215-860-4000. And we are located in Newtown at 99 Barclay Street.
So that's Newtown, Bucks County.
That's correct.
You know, I want to ask you one question because you use this terminology of people can choose this and people can choose that, especially in this palliative care, end-of-life hospice care thing. You stress the idea of individual choice and the autonomy of choice. So, and I know this is not applicable in the state of Pennsylvania, but in where I live in New Jersey, there's a bill pending, and I was just doing a workshop on this over the weekend in a congregation in Connecticut where there is a bill also pending, modeled after the Oregon bill on accepting a person's right to choose their own death. Have you run into this even in an informal way? I mean, you're stressing the idea of personal choice. How is this handled? I'm sure somewhere along the line this has come up in conversations within the CCRC, within the Chandler Hall community, of saying, you know, I made this decision. If it gets to this point, I'm going to make this choice. How has this been handled, or has it been handled?
Well, I think that yes, occasionally you hear that, but I know that in looking at Oregon and reading the research and the information that is out there, as you said, what people want is choice. What people want is the ability to make their own decisions, to have their voice heard, and to have people respect their choices. And I think even if you look at the states that have bills passed, the number of people who actually make those choices is extremely, extremely low.
Correct.
Because what people want is to be heard. And so at Chandler Hall, you know, and other organizations like us, that is our mission, is to make sure that people are heard. And we use different documents. There is a document called Five Wishes.
Five Wishes, right.
Which, you know, gives people an opportunity to be very clear about what they want for their life and at the end of their life. There's another program called Respecting Choices. And there's also a great game that we just became aware of called The Gift of Grace. And I would certainly recommend that anybody listening who's interested check it out. And
that's the card game, right?
It is.
Right, they were on the show almost a half a year ago. The developer of that game walked us through the game here, and I know several places. I know the Samaritan Hospice uses this in some of the same contexts that you're talking about as the discussion starter.
Yes, and it is a great way for people in a relaxed environment to talk about the questions, because I often think that people think about that instant decision that they have to make about
right.
whether they want to be put on a ventilator or a respirator or have CPR. They're, you know, that's not often the choices that we have to make. The choices that we have to make are, you know, who are we going to allow to dress us, or who would we want to assist us to the bathroom, or, you know, what kinds of foods do we love, and who do we want to share those meals with? So they're the kinds of questions. And we find, certainly part of our mission is to talk about choices and talk about palliative care from the very beginning, so that people can think about those questions, so people can have an opportunity to be clear with their family and their loved ones and their care providers, so that we all know what it is that people want. And I guess we also believe that by having intergenerational programs on campus, we are also opening to younger generations and to a broader community of people the idea of aging and positive aging, and that really it is a process of growth and development and learning. And I can say that one of our favorite playgrounds on campus is the hospice playground.
Great.
And people always mm-hmm. do a double take when the children talk about the hospice playground, and they say, what is the hospice playground? And it's a playground right outside of our residential hospice pavilion that the children play in and that the teachers move through. And so it's important that people know that there are opportunities, even at the end of life.
Well, we've been talking with Maureen Casey, the Chief Operating Officer of Chandler Hull Health Services, a Kendall affiliate. And we want to remind you that this portion of Boomer Generation Radio has been brought to you by Kendall, which is a system of not-for-profit communities and services in 8 states that advocates for and empowers older adults to reach their full potential. You can join Kendall and get some more information about how they transform the experience of aging, as we've just heard from Maureen, by visiting them at www.discoverkendall.org. Their toll-free number is 888-759-0128. Maureen Casey, we want to thank you very, very much for just a very, very exciting and informative conversation here on Boomer Generation Radio. Continued good luck with everything you do. Great work. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
To all of you.
Thanks so much for the opportunity.
Have a great day. We'll see you next Tuesday on Boomer Generation Radio here on WWDD.
Do you have serious personal or business tax issues with the IRS or state and think you can handle it on your own? Think again. The IRS does not have to inform you of your rights. If you have unfiled returns and owe over $10,000, you may be visited by a revenue officer. Say or do the wrong thing, they can seize your bank accounts, garnish wages, close your business, and even file criminal charges. The IRS is the largest, most aggressive collection agency. Get protected now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Professionals. Our 5-star rated team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents has over 35 years experience dealing with the IRS and state. We can stop collections, get you protected, and take advantage of new laws that allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Call now. We will review your case for free and give you a price guaranteed quote. No games, no gimmicks, just serious representation. Call now. 800-223-5971. That's 800-223-5971. U.S. Tax Professionals. 800-223-5971.
WWDV Philadelphia, 860 AM.